everybody. Welcome to the Android Central Podcast. My name is Russell Holly. This is usually where you are told what the episode number is, but I'm bad at my job, so I don't actually know what it is. But this is what happens when I am left in charge of things, like a podcast, while everyone else is flying across the ocean to Mobile World Congress to see all of the new things that we are going to get from them this week. We're going to talk about that and a bunch of other stuff. But first, I kind of lied. I'm actually not alone. I am joined by Florence Ion.
Hello. This is the Rogue Podcast. Android Central gone rogue.
What happens when everyone else leaves? And we could not have a Rogue Podcast without Jerry Hildenbrand.
Hey, hey, what do you say?
So
this
I guess
is episode 325.
Is it episode 325?
Yes. Well, the last one was 324, and if my math skills are right, that'd be 325.
324.3.
I could just imagine Dan and Andrew go to listen to this, and then I won't be allowed to do a podcast again for a while. So we need to talk a little bit about Mobile World Congress, but that is not the only event happening this week, and it's not the only event that we got some information on this week. We have three, so we're gonna go around and hit all three of them, and those are Mobile World Congress, the Game Developer Conference, and of course Google I/O. But I guess given its proximity and significance, we should start with Mobile World Congress.
Yes, the big smartphone show in Spain.
It's the big smartphone show, but like I don't know the last 2 years. Samsung has put on a big presentation for a watch.
Oh, what?
Hasn't that been at MWC, or am I just completely?
I'm not sure. I thought they did that in Berlin.
That's right. They do that at IFA. God, I'm so bad at my job. So Samsung doesn't have like a major, huge presentation planned for Mobile World Congress this year. Like Samsung's going to be there, and they're going to be talking about some of the cool stuff that they're doing. But I really think I feel almost like they're intentionally stretching out time.
Yes.
So that when the Galaxy S8 is launched, we have hopefully forgotten about that other phone that had those other problems.
Yes, you're absolutely on the mark.
So Mobile World Congress is not gonna have like a big major unveil from Samsung, and instead, I really feel like the headlining manufacturer this year is LG.
You're correct. And can I just say, I'm really curious what the atmosphere is going to be like in Barcelona without this giant Samsung announcement looming over everyone's heads. Because I feel like that was always like the big Samsung. I mean, to be honest, Samsung is like the really, Samsung and LG, the two really big names at Mobile World Congress and the two really big press conferences. And this year, LG doesn't really have to compete with anybody.
Well, and the biggest part of that from our perspective, kind of like a weird inside baseball thing, is actually planning in previous years where all of the human beings that are in Barcelona are going to be. Because like it's not like a convention center where, you know, all of these things are happening like next door to each other. You know, the Fira Gran Via, I think is the name of the place where Samsung has usually done stuff is not close to a lot of the other presentations.
Nope.
And so in years past, like Samsung would have a big thing, but then there's like at least a half an hour, you know, truck across town to get to whatever the next presentation is, which was usually happening almost immediately after or before what Samsung was doing. And so this year it's not that there is less to do. It's the things that are less to do are less like massive, I guess, in scale. And so, yeah, LG kind of has control of the show from our perspective.
Good.
This is interesting. So what do we think about what's been leaked about what's coming?
It sounds like we have a phone where the bottom doesn't come off. And that I think is going to excite a lot of people.
I think all of us here have used the G5. You know, at least a little bit. If the phone didn't have that weird paint job on it and the bottom didn't pop open and leave that big crack in the back, we would have loved it a whole lot more.
Yeah, see, I didn't have a problem with the bottom of the phone coming off. I thought the modular idea was cool if they could, you know, bring some stuff to it. And it turned out that they couldn't. Motorola had a way better idea for that, it turns out. But my problem with LG was that they did this modular thing and then didn't put any thought into like water resistance or anything like that. It was so bizarre to take the bottom of that phone off and take the battery out and look inside and see like circuit boards. Like you could see the phone, you know, the inside of the phone.
This is true.
When you looked inside, and that was really bizarre to me, but none of that.
But you said the magic words though, removable battery.
Yeah. Well, I mean, removable battery has always been, yeah. LG fans have been hard pressed for the removable battery and removable storage for a really long time.
But according to the rumors,
nothing. This looks like a sealed phone from the stuff that we've seen. This is a sealed phone. No weird rubbery thing to peel off the back to get to the battery. No, this looks like glass on both sides, which would make me unhappy.
And very little bezel.
Because all phones with glass on both sides make me unhappy. But
they are slippery.
You're a miscreant.
I am. I've hated it since the Nexus 4. You know, they brought it out on the Nexus 4, and I got, you know, people got mad at me for you know, being mean to the Nexus 4. I didn't like that. The only reason that I liked the S7 was that the sides were enough that I could hold it and not touch the back.
Yep.
Jeez.
Because the S7 was small enough that I wasn't touching the glass on the back, so it wasn't constantly bothering me. But I didn't like the S7 Edge because I was touching the back and it bothered me. And then the Note 7, you know, had the same thing where the form was just enough that I wasn't constantly touching the back, so I wasn't constantly reminded that the back of the phone was glass.
Well,
see, I had a Nexus 4 and a iPhone 4S at the same time and just would touch the glass backs to my face lovingly. I loved it. Beautiful.
Stick them in the freezer on a hot day, take them out, put them against your face, cool
that's
down.
Just so bad.
So refreshing.
So yeah, we've got glass. It doesn't look like we're getting any like crazy colors like we've gotten from Samsung.
Or crazy
over
features
the last couple of years.
For that matter.
Well, I feel like leaks are never complete, so I'm holding
it's
out
true.
Hope that LG is going to be like, "Hey, so by the way, it does this thing."
That's true.
You know, whatever that thing is, but yeah, no big earth-shattering feature has leaked.
Good.
You know, like a retina scanner or anything crazy like
good.
That. This looks like LG said, "Let's go back to the drawing board and let's make a phone that is just straight up a really good phone."
Dude, I know the three of us, but and a lot of people listening, let's be honest, one of the best phones LG ever made was the Nexus 5. There was a lot of things wrong with it.
You're right, Jerry.
Picked it up, you turned it on, it worked, and it worked well.
No, you're
well.
Right. It was the last great Nexus device? Yeah, the last great Nexus device, I guess.
But that's like LG needs to go pills. Back to that. LG needs to give us a phone that looks modern and just runs. Just,
the G2 and G3
and
were
just,
pretty
yep.
popular, or the G3 and G4. No, the G2 and the G3 were pretty popular. I still see people wielding those, even though they're older.
The G3
were
good phones. Crazy popular.
Yeah, I still see the G3. I didn't see much of the G4. I have not. I saw one G5 in the wild in the last year.
So I feel like I saw a lot of the G4 around here because
interesting.
There was a really good promo here when Verizon released the weird version of it that had the football leather back.
NFL
and,
exclusivity.
And, yeah. I mean, I'm so, you know, Verizon is really big here in Maryland, mm-hmm. and I am a stone's throw from Raven Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as soon as you put those two things together in you know, what is a considerable sports town, they just, you know, flew off the shelf here.
Man, I never thought
Verizon
about that.
Should have made it in purple and had Ray Lewis sign the back.
I mean,
everybody
yeah,
in Baltimore would have it.
Oh, my gosh.
You're not lying. It's crazy here sometimes.
Are you guys saying that LG should have just gone like the sportsman's phone? Get it customized with your team colors.
Understand that in this area, when the football leather version of the G4 came out, that's basically what Verizon did. Like,
that's
all the
amazing.
Ads around here for that phone, it was basically like, you're not a real Ravens fan unless you have this phone. Like, that's basically what the ads around here were.
You know, I'm 50 miles west, and yeah, it creeps its way out here. Baltimore is just insane with their football.
Yeah, it was pretty nuts to see that happen. So as a result, there are a lot of G4s around here. But you're right. When I travel other places, I don't usually see a ton of them. I do usually see more G3s. I don't know that I've noticed a ton of G2s recently. But I guess we're finally on the tail of that.
That's also true.
My point was that LG can make a good basic phone. They can make one really, really well. And the way the G5 was received, and I'm not going to say the G5 was a bad phone. It kind of looked bad, but I thought it was a better phone all around than the Galaxy S7. I know, unpopular opinion.
Whoa. Oh, but very controversial.
Bring us a phone that just works. No weird, goofy stuff going on. It's just a great phone.
Maybe that's the theme of the year. Just make good products.
Just make us a phone that isn't weird.
Yeah.
Don't try and surprise us. Because you know Samsung's going to do the same thing. Samsung is not going to stick their nose out for anything this year.
Nope.
No.
Like after what happened with the Note 7, they are going to play it so safe with the S8. Yep.
The S8 is just going to be an S7 with a new number on the back.
It's a good, solid smartphone.
Which is fine. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. But yeah, it is going to be interesting. And it also means that this is probably going to be a year for Apple to catch up.
Ooh.
As far as features and stuff go. Because,
what else would they take away from the iPhone?
No, so like the big thing for Apple this past year, the past 2 years really, has been that they've not been able to claim that they were the best camera. And
oh, that's true.
You know,
and now they have the portrait mode, and it's every time I see it like pop up on social media, I am also too very impressed by the iPhone camera.
It took them a little while to roll that out, but it's going to be nice, and it's going to be a default feature on their next phone. And so this year we're going to have a lot of safe phones from these big manufacturers, and then whatever Google does with the next version of the Pixel.
Maybe we've reached peak phone. Maybe.
I feel like I'm. It's probably going to be how it feels at the end of this year, because there's going to be a lot of kind of playing it safe and not a lot of massive technological steps forward, but. If you look at how phones have been released in the past, the next year is when you see those, tectonic leaps forward, the giant shaking. So yeah, LG is definitely going to run the show, but they're probably not the only big name doing stuff. Probably going to see stuff from Sony.
Yes, but
they're usually a big presence.
It's going to be expensive. It's not going to get released here in the U.S. initially. And when it does get released in the U.S., it's not going to have a fingerprint scanner. But we will see something from Sony at MWC, I'm sure.
I'm giggling over here after the fingerprint scanner comment. Also, let's not forget Canada's favorite, BlackBerry.
Oh, right. Yes. Wow. Man, Kevin would have fired me on the spot. I can't believe I forgot.
That's my next. I'm hyped for that.
The one that that we previewed at CES.
Yeah, the Mercury, whatever it's going to be.
It's a very beautiful phone in person.
I think they should just name it the Mercury. I feel like they're not going to.
What a beautiful name!
They're going to drift away from it, because that was its code name. So they're not going to. That's not going to be its official name.
But it's unfortunate because that's sort of like the best way to sell a product in this day and age is give it a name that sort of stands out, something that people can instantly refer to. When they think of Mercury, I mean, we're not thinking about the planet. It's not really a popular planet.
I hope they name it the Curve 10,000.
See, and that's what I hope that they don't do. I hope they don't, go to the, version numbers and stuff like that. Because,
I'm going to have to count five zeros every time I write it out.
There wasn't anything wrong with the DTEC 50.
No.
Like, as a budgety phone that offered security features, there wasn't a problem with it. But nobody is going to look at that name on a piece of paper somewhere and go, oh, I want to know more about that phone. Unless you're a BlackBerry fan.
The DTEC 60 takes that to the extreme because we forgot about it. I use one every day, and I'm going to tell you, that's probably one of the best phones of 2016. And nobody bought it, nobody cares, and having a name like DTEC 60 didn't help.
Right. Yeah. So I hope that, you know, we don't get that from BlackBerry Mobile, which is the division that is not BlackBerry. This is a separate thing now where they're calling it BlackBerry Mobile. And actually, as much as we all enjoy kind of shaking our head at our beloved CrackBerry Kevin, he did give a great explanation of the difference between BlackBerry and BlackBerry Mobile on the CrackBerry YouTube channel. Like it's I think it's like a 6-minute video, and it's well worth watching if you're interested in, you know, what the functional differences between those two brandings are going to be. I thought that was really good.
But that keyboard, man, I can. Well, you all have seen my messaging. I'm a bad, bad typo machine. I read some of the things that I've sent, and I'm like, nobody's going to be able to understand that, so I have to send it again. I don't look when I'm typing, either on a keyboard or on my phone. But if that keyboard is the same, it looks a lot like the keyboard I'm used to using. I don't need to look. I can just take my thumb and tap, 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 tap. And that's just me right there. I don't care about anything else.
Yeah, and I mean, everything that I heard, the physical keyboard was what we know and what Jerry and I love from BlackBerry keyboards. With a single point of compromise in that there's this weird gap between the end of the keyboard at the at the top of the phone and where software suggestions and stuff are going to show up, because there are capacitive buttons in a strip in between those two things, and that I feel like is going to take, like, I feel like especially for you, Jerry, where you're like typing and not looking, that gap is going to, like, you're going to finger drift and you're going to accidentally hit that.
Probably.
I had to bring up a picture to see what you were referring to, by the way.
So if certain words get sent, I really didn't mean it. I'm going to warn you in advance.
Yeah, that's the concern there, is that, you know, it's going to lead to either some accidental button presses or just like closing apps, you know. That you don't want to close with some increased frequency. But
just
stop
ruining my buzz for that thing.
No, I think otherwise it's going to be a pretty solid phone. Like I said, that is my one concern, and it's honestly a muscle memory thing. You know, people who go use this phone, it'll be a thing that they'll, you know, people will gripe about the first week that they use it, and then they'll adapt to it once muscle memory takes
over.
Very
true.
Right. I took to the Priv really easily, and I used that until I just couldn't use it anymore. It just won't cut it for me.
Yeah.
And it was easy to adjust. So I'm looking forward to it.
You guys, you know what else I'm looking forward to? Google I.O. Oh. How excited are you guys for Google I.O.?
That was a healthy pivot right there.
She's super good at this. About
that. I'll be honest with you. I'm not excited about Google I.O.
Explain.
Get out.
Explain yourself.
I've been to a couple of them.
Yes,
I did not go to the one last year, but everyone that I know went last year was some degree of miserable while they were there.
It's
because
true.
It was hot and the sun was out, and they're doing this Shoreline Amphitheater thing. There weren't enough spaces in the tents for all the presentations that were being given. You know, from a press perspective, it was uncomfortable. From a developer perspective, it was untenable. And that's frustrating given, you know, how effective I have seen developers be when they go to I.O. and they sit in these sessions and they have the ability to talk to the people at Google who are behind these things and then walk away and have a much better idea of how to improve their app and you know, generally, you know, do better. As a developer, it frustrates me that the Shoreline Amphitheater last year took away from that. And so far, there hasn't been a ton of indication that there's been an effort to fix that.
I wonder if this year we're going to see less press roaming around the campus of the Shoreline Amphitheater. You know, they had asked us extensively, like, to leave feedback last year about what we liked and what we didn't like about the show. And I took it upon myself to answer as truthfully as I could and mention that, like, the heat is an issue. Having, you know, that many people crammed inside, like, a small air-conditioned tent is not really the best way to sit and focus, that sort of thing. So that's why I kind of wonder if they're just going to make it less and less of a press event over time to sort of bring back the focus to developers, to get them together, you know, to keep fostering the sense of community that Android is so known for. And of course, let's not forget also that Apple is moving WWDC to San Jose. And that was also like a huge controversy this week. So I just think it's interesting to note that these two developer conferences are going further south. And I wonder what's going on in San Francisco that they're switching locales.
There's got to be a reason that both Google and Apple have dumped downtown San Francisco.
Mm-hmm. Something about, like, maybe it's something to do with the Moscone West.
Scheduling. It's not any cheaper. It's not any cheaper to stay in the South Bay, by the way. I mean, you're paying the same amount of money for a hotel room with less of a view.
A big thing about the Shoreline Amphitheater makes sense to me. Is its proximity to the Google campus. You know, moving all of that stuff from the Google campus to the Shoreline Amphitheater. Yeah, it's so simple. And, you know, if for people who have been to Google I.O., watching the days before I.O. started at the Moscone West, when like just truck after truck after truck was coming down to deliver stuff, you know, through the city to get stuff into this convention center, it was several days of setup.
The logistics are ridiculous. Yeah,
to get it all there.
It's probably cheaper too, right? Because you don't have to, like, you have to pay all that manpower to move those things. You don't have to, you know, pay for the trucks. And I mean, the Shoreline is literally in Google's backyard. There is a fence that pretty much splits them.
I'm sure it's more expensive in different ways. I'm sure that they save money in some ways, but I don't think that was. I doubt that money was a huge.
This is true. This is Google
for that move. Yeah.
Well, yeah. At the Shoreline, imagine the cost of erecting all those. I'll call them tents.
I mean, they're basically that small portable buildings. Like,
yeah.
We call them tents, but
pricey, and I'm sure they didn't buy them; they rented them. So it's, you know, I don't know about money. I think there's just something at either Moscone West or San Francisco that was just causing an issue.
Or maybe they're changing the scope of Google I.O. so that it's more fun. It's more community oriented. It's more interactive in a sense. Like, you come, you pay all this money as a developer to come and party with other developers. I really liked, you know, despite all my kvetching last year about the way covering the show was hard with the heat and everything, I really liked the atmosphere of the Shoreline. It really felt like this fun festival, and being there, sort of separating myself from the job that I was there to do, I tried to take a moment to sort of think, if I were here as just a developer and I'm just here because of my love of Android, this is actually quite a lot of fun. I mean, there's all these interactive exhibits. You can just talk to whoever you want to. I mean, there were people that were hanging out at night, kind of. I mean, it's. I don't mean this as hyperbole, but it did feel a little Disneylandish. You know?
No, sure. I mean, it's definitely, you know, being able to kind of wander through and see some of the more interesting things there is great. You know what I don't want to hear people complain about, and I've already started to see some of this, and I'm just not interested in the conversation, is the cost of the ticket.
Yeah.
Which has gone up, what was it? Is it $200?
It's like $300. I mean, which in the grand, I feel like in the grand scheme of things, maybe isn't.
Which isn't the first time that Google has increased the prices on stuff. But is also still way, way cheaper than similar conferences elsewhere. You take a look at Microsoft's Build conference and Apple's WWDC conference. They are both considerably more expensive for a developer, and especially for a group of developers, than Google I.O.
I just got a thing in my inbox for an Intel event It's not the big Intel event at Moscone West that they have every year. It's another one. $3,200.
Right.
Wow.
So
just for the event.
Google has been pretty considerate as far as your average developer cost goes.
It pays for facilities. For this kind of event. It pays for three, like you're eating three meals a day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner there. I can't remember if the alcohol was free. I can't remember that, but
I'm sure it was for some of the events, but maybe yeah. Not all of them.
Yeah. Regardless. The other sort of little event that we have coming up next week in San Francisco, which I will be walking around a little bit, is GDC.
GDC stands for
Game Developers Conference.
It stands for some other things that I can't say, too. If you go look at the comments on any Kotaku story.
Oh, dear. Every year, game developers get together. All the big brands, all the big names get together, make announcements. GDC is a great place to go if you are a game developer. Again, speaking of developers conferences, it's a great place to go if you want to network. They have a whole track that you can do that. This year, the outstanding track... Now, I've been to GDC a couple of times throughout the last 10 years, and the show has gotten considerably bigger over the years. Now, I didn't attend last year, but I do know that this year there is quite a large focus on virtual reality, of course. Russell, I know that's up your alley.
Yeah, I mean, so, VR, had grown pretty considerably over the last 2 years, and especially this year where, all of these companies now have hardware out in the wild and are now focusing on trying to get developers to build stuff for it. Mm-hmm. We have Google is going to be doing stuff for getting Daydream developers. Oculus is going to be doing stuff for the Gear VR and for the Oculus Rift.
Yep.
There's just a ton going on for VR stuff, and a little bit, not as much as some people thought there was going to be, but a little bit for augmented reality gaming. Because we had this weird Pokemon thing that happened earlier this year. and so now there's a section of the industry who really wants to know what the next Pokemon Go is going to be. And nobody has told them yet that there isn't going to be a thing that is the next Pokemon Go.
You don't think so?
No. That happened because Pokemon has 20 years of brand recognition.
So true.
Across multiple generations of people playing the game. They had the big update earlier this week to the game, and I realized as the update came out that I don't understand any of the new stuff that is happening. I might as well have never, like, I don't know who any of these new Pokemon are. I have never seen them before. My daughter showed me one that she caught earlier this week that I'm pretty sure was just a pine cone with eyeballs.
Yes, that does exist.
And I had never seen any, so it was really funny because it showed me like the demarcation line for when I stopped caring about Pokemon as a teenager and moved on. And my younger brothers, they now recognize all of these things, and there's the show's still happening. It's still new stuff that is being brought out. So I mean, the game can continue for a really considerable amount of time, bringing new stuff. And as they bring new stuff, it's gonna spark that nostalgia in an entirely different group of people.
But see, the same thing happened with the RPG. Look, it just keeps going and refreshing and new Pokemon and this. Yeah, you're right. There's so much brand recognition that now spans a generation, two generations of kids.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if someone could figure out how to do a cool augmented reality game with like The Simpsons,
then
there might be a way to get something similar to, the Pokemon effect, because that's something that has also, been on television for forever and has spanned several generations. But I don't think that there's going to be a thing that, we can point at and go, well, that's the next Pokemon Go, because I don't think that, but they're a big part of, or not a big part, but a part of GDC is going to be that conversation, where there are going to be developers talking about how augmented reality, can affect your game and can improve your game and getting people out in the real world and doing stuff. And that's been a big part of GDC from my perspective. I've only been the once. And Flo, you probably have a better handle on this, but that my understanding is that a big part of that is that these developer tracks are a lot more personal.
Yes.
Where they're in smaller rooms, not what you would consider from like a big auditorium, and the conversations that happen inside of them are pretty frequently, kind of intimate and way better at, kind of spurring new ideas among these developers.
You're absolutely right. And I think the one thing that I sort of regret, I regret it in a sense that, I am always working GDC, so I got to spend a lot of time on the floor kind of seeing what demos are out there and such. But I know from reading Twitter and following other game developers that sort of like Google I.O., which is this, by the way, this is part of the reason I like to go to GDC, because it kind of has that same spirit, even though there are very many different brands at GDC, each with their own, little personalities. One of the reason I like it is because you just have a lot of developers getting together and just ideating and talking about the industry and how the industry is moving forward. And that's kind of why I'm excited to go crash the party, so to speak. I'm not going to crash the party, but I'm curious to go and see what the environment is like now that virtual reality is sort of becoming, it's really trying to inch its way into like mainstream gaming. I'm very curious to see where it's going to take off, especially because all you really need for it, if you don't have, if you don't have all the bells and whistles of hardware, all you really need is your phone.
So, Jerry, we usually see something from NVIDIA at GDC.
This is true.
It's usually not hardware related, sometimes it is, but we got a big hardware announcement at CES, so it's not going to be hardware related this time. What do you think NVIDIA's plans for next, is going to be?
NVIDIA needs to find a way to build their intelligence, let's say, for their GPUs, so it works with VR and without VR. They need to offer something to developers. Here's a whole package. You can code your game. And I mean, look at the issues getting Fallout 4, for example, to run on the Oculus. It's something they had talked about how many months, Russell? It's just been forever. If NVIDIA could provide tools with their physics engine and their logic, code once and it works both places, game developers will love it, end users will love it. And I really think NVIDIA is going to focus on, the stuff that makes their video cards good, makes you like using them when you play their games.
Good times.
Good times.
Yeah, that's
indeed.
All I could think of, man. You put me on the spot. I'm like, what would NVIDIA do?
Yeah, I mean,
that would make a cool bracelet.
Makes a lot
what
of
would
sense.
NVIDIA do? But VR is, I we all talk to some of these people at some of these companies, and I'll use the word friends. I've got some friends that work at NVIDIA. They talk about VR a lot. So I think that the company is well aware of that that's a direction they need to go.
All right. Well, I mean, there's definitely some room there to kind of show off what's happening. What do you think, Flo? This is wildly off topic and really only because you've been to GDC as many times as you have. What do you think is the kind of the silliest demonstration of a new game idea that you've seen at GDC so far? Because that's another thing that happens is when you go onto the show floor, They're kind of big, ridiculous demonstrations of the game to kind of lure people in to play games and try new things.
Okay, I have to think. This is kind of like a moment, and you'll have to forgive me that I don't know the names of everybody. So the head of Nintendo.
Okay.
Reggie, right?
Reggie Fils-Aimé, yeah.
Yes. He was on the show floor. I think this is when the 3DS came out. I believe, or was it the DSi? I don't even remember, but it was one of the DSs came out and he was just on the show floor, just demoing it. And people were mobbing him to like see this new little console and see like what game was going on. So that was kind of an interesting sort of, I think that was my first GDC actually. That was an interesting sort of look. It's like, oh, this is the games industry. This is exciting.
Yeah, I think the game community in general, the love affair with Reggie Fils-Aimé, especially when it comes to mocking him, is
yes, I know.
It's so ridiculous.
But yeah, he was just hanging out and people were just coming up to him and like he's just talking to them about the new DS. And I was just like, huh, all right, he's just out here. Nobody's really like bodyguarding him. Nothing of that sort. You know, I was just, okay. I tried to talk to him, but he wasn't interested in me.
I would find that much more interesting than Bungie running around with t-shirt cannons or something, you know.
Yeah, I think that.
Low key can be great.
Although, you guys, the best part of GDC, and this is because I am secretly a 73-year-old woman on the inside, I love to sit at a slot machine with a drink and just blow my money on a slot machine, is the slot machine exhibition that they have toward the back of the convention center.
Right, because it's like, not just consoles and mobile games and stuff. It really is any kind of game development. And that definitely includes arcade games and slot machines.
Yeah, and let's not forget the Konami building that we see when we're taking off from McCarran Airport in Las Vegas.
That's right.
Because Konami does make a lot of casino games, and they will debut them at GDC. And so you get to see what's coming out to Vegas and casinos around the country. It's kind of cool.
I've got some people that told me the big presentation to look for this year, if you're going to GDC as a developer or just to check it out, is a Prey. It's Bethesda ZeniMax. It's their new game.
Wow.
And they are supposed to go completely over the top.
So for reference, I'm just going to be paying a lot of attention to what's going on in the virtual reality mobile space, just because I feel like that's the world I've been mostly entrenched in as when it comes to gaming, because that's what's been accessible to me in my life, quite frankly, is entertaining myself with the devices that I have on me at all times, which are my mobile devices, smartphone, tablets, occasionally my laptop. Also, I know that Google has a huge presence this year at GDC. Yep. And of course, with everything that we've had come out in the last couple of months, Daydream VR, the capabilities of the Pixel, that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, that is the potential to be really fun. And
yes,
this is going to be, you know, the Google always has, you know, a lot of interesting things to show off, especially when it comes to all different kinds of games. Because you got to think, you know, the Google gaming thing is not just one group at Google. It's Chrome experiments and Android games, and now, you know, VR gaming, and for a while there was an attempt to make Chrome gaming a thing, like through the Chromebook, and that didn't really turn out so well for everyone. But,
you guys, that bums me out. Sorry, continue.
But we've got Android apps on Chromebooks now, and one of the things that we've seen is you know, kind of a bump in hardware for Chromebooks, like with the new new Samsungs. So, you know, it wouldn't be entirely unheard of for Google to kind of go back to that a little bit, and maybe not pitch it as you know, Chrome OS gaming like we saw a while back, but maybe something just slightly above what we consider Android gaming that would happen on these higher end Chromebooks.
So hopefully this isn't digressing too much, but can we just talk about this Chrome gaming thing for one quick second? Because as you all know, I have purchased and adopted my first Chromebook into my family and my device family. And the one bummer is that even though I have access to Android games, I like the keyboard and mouse situation. I haven't really, because I used to be a heavy PC gamer, but I haven't really done that in about 5 years, just because, again, of how my life has changed in the last 5 years. I wish that I could leverage that when it comes to some Android games, because part of the reason that I don't maybe always play games on mobile is because I'm not a fan of the touchscreen control situation. I like the physical, tangible feel of the buttons and that like muscle memory. I mean, I'm an old school gamer. What can I say?
Maybe we just need a Chromebook that has a gamepad just kind of built into it. Press a button and it pops out.
What?
There's a solution for your Chromebook flow, but it's not a good solution because it's not easy. And that's installing another operating system and playing games and using the hardware that's there.
Yeah, I know. But I was musing.
Well, but that's like I'm saying, that's not a solution for the real world.
Yeah.
So you've hit it. You've got something that's perfectly capable, more capable than any of the other mobile-ish devices you have around. And you can't do anything with it.
And wouldn't it be super fun? This is just my wish list to anybody out there listening. Wouldn't it be super fun if we just brought back a bunch of the old school PC games from the late 90s and the early aughts that used to require very high-end hardware and now just run on anything? And just, I would just love to load up my Chromebook with that so I could just play like Doom or Heretic 2 on the plane, just, you know, have fun with these old narratives, these old first-person shooters. That's my wish. Anybody out there?
If I was on a plane and I'm boarding a plane and I see Flo, you know, sweet, perfectly normal human being, nice personality. Hi, how you doing? Sit down. And then she opens a laptop and starts playing Doom and cussing at the screen and slamming on the keys. That would be amazing.
I'm sure the person in front of me would appreciate all that slamming on the tray table.
But you're right. That would not be difficult.
Wouldn't it be
putting
fun?
Quake or Doom? You could run it through HTML, I'm sure, in a container as a web page. But there's just not a market for it.
I don't know. If we can cobble together Doom for the weird little touch bar on MacBooks.
That's and really
if we
true.
Can, if we can cobble together Doom for the display inside of a Tesla.
Oh my gosh. That's right.
Yep.
I feel like Doom for Chromebooks, you know, that wouldn't really be that big an ask.
Come on, people. Let's get together. Let's make this happen.
Feel like that would be a thing that would be a pretty good idea. And that actually takes me back, not to Doom, because while I did enjoy Doom a whole lot, the game from my childhood, the PC game from my childhood was Myst.
Yes.
And as we learned not all that long ago, it got brought back, you know, into Android form. So for me, I've kind of already got that. Like I would actually love to see what would happen if I loaded that new version of Myst onto a Chromebook, you know, full screen, to see if it really felt like I was playing Myst, you know, on a PC again. That would be pretty great.
Flo?
Yes.
If you go to Google and type in Doom on my Chromebook, you're going to be really happy. It's actually in the Chrome Web Store.
What?
Oh, what?
Yep.
I had the hardest time finding anything in that web store, by the way.
You know what? Google? You're fired, Google.
Oh, Google's fired. Google's fired.
Doom, if you search for Doom and the entry for the Chrome Web Store, it's for theme.
Brother.
Oh, that's not the same.
That's
so
lame.
There are lots of independent developers that have Doom running on Chrome. Doom, it's running on native client, which makes sense. Unfortunately, they're probably going to get rid of native client here shortly. But you've got Doom and Quake.
I can't
wait. Let's finish this podcast so I can play Quake.
I know. I was just going to say, I can't wait for all of the smartphones to stop being announced so I can like have more time to tinker around with the Chromebook and figure out, you know, how to basically turn it into the desktop of or my laptop of the future with apps of the past. Because I have this weird need for nostalgia all of a sudden.
Well, I feel you. I still use my old, the original Pixel. It's the 64 gigabyte LTE version. I'm never going to get rid of it. And when it breaks, I'll be done. But half the time, it's not running Chrome OS. It's running, you know, Linux.
Yes.
So I have a bigger choice. And mostly it's for games or video editing.
Yes. Well...
All right. Well, I guess we should probably put a pin in this one.
Yeah.
Because everything that's going to happen next, we basically get to hold our breath and wait for
it's very true
for all of the stuff to happen in Barcelona over the next couple of days. So we are gonna sit and wait while Andrew and
twiddle
Alex
our thumbs
and Daniel and Derek and Mark. Do we have anybody else there? I mean, for doing other stuff. I know that we also
Mr. Mobile.
Mr. Mobile is going to be there. I know that there's an entire massive, ridiculous thing happening with Crackberry, where it's basically like a party. They flew out people, like Crackberry, longtime Crackberry fans. They flew them to Barcelona to participate in the launch, and that wasn't BlackBerry Mobile doing that. That was the Crackberry team.
Yeah, that was Kevin because
Kevin being crazy. Kevin. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting thing to see as this all unfolds. This is a unique thing for us because I know I wasn't around. I know Flo wasn't around. Jerry, were you a part of the Mobile Nations family when Crackberry Kevin was actually Crackberry Kevin?
Yeah.
So you're the only one who knows what the madness is going to be like. I have no idea what to expect. He keeps saying that it's going to be this big different thing from how he is now, but I have nothing to compare that to.
I'm excited for BlackBerry fans. Can I just say I'm very excited for all of you.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
Yeah,
and yeah, I get that you don't want to give up on BlackBerry 10 if you're a BlackBerry fan. I get it.
Do it anyway.
Because I was the same way with BBOS 7. BlackBerry 10, no, never going to use it. I hated it. But you have to. It's done. You need to embrace something else. So you definitely need to look at what BlackBerry Mobile is going to show you because that might be your next thing.
And on that note, good night, everybody. Thank you for listening.
Good night, even though it's not nighttime here and we have no idea what time it is when you are going to be listening, but we're just going to assume that it's nighttime everywhere.
It's
really
always nighttime.
Until we see this new BlackBerry, it really is nighttime everywhere.
Good night.
Yes. Adios.